Welcome to a special Memorial Day edition of Christian Worldview. On today's show, we reflect upon the legacies of eight of America's most influential political leaders: Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Edwin Stanton, Ulysses S. Grant, Nelson Aldrich, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson. These men did their best to undermine our Constitution, shed innocent blood, and destroy the foundation of our once great nation. Now they have gone on to their eternal reward. Proverbs 10:7. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Proverbs 11:10. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting.
We'd like to welcome to you a special edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this Memorial Day, May 30th, 2005. Today's a special day because we're having a different sort of memorial. It's a memorial of villainy. That's right, a memorial of villainy. Now, we don't want to show any disrespect, of course, to the troops or men who have died in service to the American army and so forth in the country. We're not about this being disrespectful to those folks. It's just that everywhere else they have a regular Memorial Day. We're having a special Memorial Day. We want us to remember a different sort of people today, the villains of American history. Now, a number of you have your own favorite villains. I've selected for the show here about eight different villains that we're going to be talking about. In summary, we have the villains: Senator Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Secretary of Defense Edwin M. Stanton. He was the Secretary of Defense under Lincoln. Ulysses S. Grant, Senator Nelson Aldrich, who lived right around the time that the Federal Reserve Act, the Federal Reserve was started in 1913, and did his work in the early 1900s. Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson. These are our star villains of the day. Some people have already emailed saying, well, we heard about this show going on today, but we want to know why you didn't pick my favorite villain, like Mr. House, Colonel House, for instance, who was working with Woodrow Wilson as well as some other folks in the early 1900s. Well, we could have. We could have picked any number of other villains, but these were just the eight that came to mind as being folks that people need to be aware of in a strong manner as a Christian and as people who want to be thinking people. So often we've been brainwashed by the public school into believing false things about history, and especially about these particular villains that I've selected today for the show. Your phone calls, of course, are welcome today. We'd like to invite you to call our studio either on the backup line is 864 area code 201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. And what's our temporary number again? It's 849-0277, is it not? 849-0277. We're having some phone changes, and our phone changes have caused us to lose temporarily our 244-8177 number. So you can now dial 849-0277. That's 849-0277. Love to hear from you this morning here on Christian Worldview. Well, why is it important for Christians to know something about history? Well, for one thing, those who are, as the wise saying or the great quotation goes, those who are ignorant of history are doomed to repeat it. And secondly, if we don't know anything about history, we don't know anything about our enemy, the state. Yes, that's right. Our state, the state is and has been our greatest enemy or one of our greatest foes as the Christian church in the history of the world. The state has not been our friend. It's not been the thing that's been used to our benefit by and large in the world. In fact, the state has been our enemy that has killed more Christians than anything else, including false religion. And so we want to be careful when we think about the state to have a biblical understanding of what government is all about, what the state is all about. Joining me this morning in the studio is Rippin' Richie. He looks like he's ready to speak into the microphone, so I want to make sure that I give him a chance to do so. Good morning, Richie.
You're doing good, John. Keep up the good work.
Well, I can hardly hear your microphone this morning.
I'll crank it up then.
Yeah, you need to do that because I want to make sure that even though you're sitting at the long end of that table, I'm able to hear what you have to say.
Check 1, 2.
Yes, yeah, that's so much better. That's just much, much better at any rate. Senator Henry Clay. Should we start with him? What do we know about Senator Henry Clay? What are his crimes? Well, Senator Henry Clay lived from 1777 to 1852. 1777 to 1852. Although he was a minor criminal, relatively speaking, he wasn't as bad as some of the others on our list. He was the forerunner of much crime and much heinousness that went on in the United States. His crimes included using government to help business, promoting a central bank, imperialistic foreign policy. He built upon the Hamiltonian what would become later the neocon idea that so opposed the ideals of Jefferson and the framers, making him one of the great fathers of American political evil and a forerunner of the evils that we'll talk about later of people like Abraham Lincoln as well as George W. Bush, among others. You see, for Henry Clay, the state was an integral part of society. The state had to be there in order to help business people prosper more than they would otherwise do by granting them monopoly privileges through tariffs or just through grants.
Explain the monopoly privilege through tariffs.
Well, I thank you for asking that. Well, what happens is when you have a product or service that you're not able to sell well, first of all, because it's inefficiently produced, and other people from foreign nations are able to produce the same thing of the same quality or better, they're able to import them cheaper, and people will not buy your product. So what happens is a tariff is thrown up, which means a tax on the importation. So people wanting to buy that good will have to pay a tariff as it comes into the country to make it of equal price or greater price than your own. Now, to the extent that they make a greater price than your own, that you become the sole owner of the property that can be sold at the lowest price and become essentially a monopolist. Now, there are other people in the market, yes, but because they are being forced out by the artificially higher price of the tariff, you become the monopoly owner and monopoly privileged.
So
person.
Basically, if someone's some guy's making T-shirts and he has to sell them for $10 to make a profit, but they're making them over in China for $3, they can sell them for $5 and make a profit. Then the government puts a tax on the ones from China, so they actually end up being more expensive than the $10 that the local guy needs to sell them for.
That's right. And who loses in that whole transaction is the consumer. The consumer ends up being harmed, may end up paying much more for his goods and services. The only people that benefit are the business and perhaps some of the employees that work for that business, a relatively small number of Americans. But nevertheless, this is the idea of protectionism. It was the idea of Henry Clay. Henry Clay is also the forerunner of those who love the idea of public works, that in order to help business, government had to create all sorts of projects, whether it's canal building or what would later become, it wasn't in his era, but later, railroad building, anything that could be used by business to promote industry in the land. He used essentially the state to foster public enterprises and many, many public works projects. FDR became great in doing public works later on for building dams and creating lakes and things like that in his efforts. And all of these guys, to one extent or the other, were using the state to promote business. Was that any clearer?
Now I understand.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. He also was part and parcel of promoting the central bank. Now, the central bank is one of the most evil, nefarious institutions we have here in America today.
Even worse than MTV?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I take MTV over the central bank. And you see, MTV can turn off, but, I mean, it's serious. This is, if you don't like MTV, that is. I don't. But at any rate, it's easy to turn off if you want to. Central bank, you can't turn off. In fact, because of its counterfeiting laws and legal tender rules and so forth, the central bank is the monopoly issuer of currency. Of course, the central bank began in 1913, but there were tries at starting a central bank long before then, and this Senator Henry Clay was one who was promoting central banking here in the United States, and this is a great evil. Now, what do you do without a central bank? Have you thought about if you didn't have a central bank issuing, for instance, the green scrips that we use today called Federal Reserve notes, you know, the 10s and 20s and the 5s and 1s. And one's got Washington's face on it, all these kinds of things. You know, those little things, pieces of paper in your wallet or your purse. What in the world are these things? What would we do without them, I should say? And what happened between 1776 and 1913? Well, the answer is quite simple. People traded in real money. Do you know what real money was?
I guess real money is something that's backed up by gold.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, it usually was gold, period. It wasn't even backed up by gold. It was just a gold coin. If you look back at American numismatic history, which means a history of collectible coins, you can simply look at the things that were minted by the United States government from 1776 on until 1913, even beyond that, through 1933, and you'll find pieces of gold. They were just they were sometimes mixed with copper to protect the gold, because the gold's so soft it'll rub away in your hands over time. They might have put something hard in there to harden the gold, a little bit of an impurity like copper or tin or something. But nevertheless, you were trading almost a whole ounce of gold when you had a $20 face piece, and you had a half ounce of gold, more or less, pretty close, when you had a $10 coin, all the way down to the pennies, which were done, or dimes, which were done in silver, and quarters and so forth. All these things were actually real metals. Now, the larger or wealthier people, I should say, of the world did use banknotes. And banknotes were privately issued currency. That is, every bank could be the Bank of Podunk, Iowa, or the Bank of New York, whatever bank it might have been, issued a currency. And that currency was valued. Of course, it was very large denominations usually, because most people didn't have to trade with the bills. They preferred the gold and silver, the common people. But nevertheless, if you had one of these notes, that note was only worth what the bank's credibility was worth, or the integrity of the bank, so went the value of the note. And so what happened is, if you had a Bank of Iowa note and you're in New York, you might end up getting it discounted because people weren't sure about it. Remember, they didn't have the internet or TV or telephones or any way to check on the veracity or value of a note, and so they might only give you 50 cents on a dollar if you had one of those notes. But in the local area, it was used as cash. Even before then, they had used warehouse receipts, receipts for commodities like tobacco in Virginia or other things. And these warehouse receipts were traded much as cash. And they're very similar to checks today. So that was another kind of money that they had. And the free market regulated the issue of notes and currency simply by forcing banks to maintain a very high quality standard in their portfolios of loans and so forth. And they just could not go out on a limb like they do today. Otherwise, their note value would drop and people wouldn't be willing to use it anymore. But that's how it existed for a long time. And people complained about it, the liberals, of course, that it was unstable and all these sorts of things. But you know what? There's been no greater instability monetarily than the instability that's been caused by having a central bank. Now, and we'll talk about that a little bit later when we get to Aldrich and some of these other criminals in history. Yes, they are villains and criminals. I know no other way to describe these state people that have ruined America. These are the ruiners of America, these men that I've mentioned. And Henry Clay was at the head of this, not only because he was an interventionist that wanted to use government to help big business, but because he promoted the central bank. Now, do you know who the one who our great president? No, this is a mixed president. He was still a great president for this alone. He opposed the bankers trying to come in and centralize the money supply in the 1820s. Do you know who that was?
Yep.
Who?
Andrew Jackson.
You're right. He's on the $20 bill. Most of the folks who, and if you want to know what he looks like, just pull out a 20 out of your pocket. That's pretty much what he looked like.
Cool hairdo.
Andrew Jackson was a good guy. I mean, he did some blunders in the War of 1812 and some other. There were some other issues with Jackson that people could raise, but never. And his treatment of the Indians was generally appalling, as far as I can tell. Nevertheless, he did do this one right. He kept out the bankers. Almost lost re-election. Almost lost his life trying to do so, and keep them out of centralizing the money supply. And you say, well, Dr. Cohen, who cares? Why would why would they want to centralize the money supply? Well, let me put it to you this way. If you had an opportunity to take 13% of all the money in issuance in the United States or the world, everywhere, 13% of all money, not just talking about the bills, I'm talking about the money that's stored in people's accounts as well, supposedly stored there, 13% of that would be a pretty large sum. Can you imagine how many trillions of dollars that would be, by the way? It's a lot of money. Now, what if you were able to earn 3% on 13% of all the money? Do you suppose that would amount to a lot? Well, it would obviously would amount to billions and billions of dollars just in interest. What if you could borrow 13% of all the money in the world, or United States money that there is, and not pay anything for it. In other words, you get to borrow it for free. And you get to borrow it at the point of a gun, and if they don't, essentially the point of a gun, you get the money if they're part of the Federal Reserve System, for instance. And then you got to get 3%. So your borrowing cost is zero, your lending gain is 3%. You're talking about ultra rich. Ultra rich. That's what they wanted to do with this. They wanted to create a fractional reserve banking system that allowed people, the banks, to lend out more than they had in reserves and therefore make a windfall and a profit from it. That's what it was all about. That's what Henry Clay was supporting. We're going to be talking about somebody else who was supporting it too, and his name was Abraham Lincoln. Maybe you didn't realize that Abraham Lincoln, as a congressman, was a major supporter of the central bank. It shouldn't be any surprise to you if you know something about the evils of that man. But you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, a special edition today, a memorial of villainy. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Are you interested in knowing about the faith and legacies of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson? Check out Warriors of Honor. It's a new DVD produced by New Liberty Videos. You can get a copy of this video by emailing the Tyranny Response Network production staff at production@policyofliberty.net. That's production@policyofliberty.net. It's only $20, and it's well worth it. Take it from me, Dr. John Coben. I've seen this video, Warriors of Honor. It is just outstanding in producing something of value for those who love liberty, who hold to the Christian perspective, and want to be encouraged about our past. Finally, a documentary that is willing to speak plainly about the Christian faith of Jackson and Lee. It is a beautiful and accurate account of two great Southern leaders and a war that forever changed our country. Steve Wilkins. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPROS, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPROS.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Albert Einstein once said, "Unthinking respect for authority is the greatest enemy of truth."
And welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We've been talking about Senator Henry Clay, and we're going to move on to the next villain here. But just to give you a couple other things about him, some people think, well, why in the world bring up Henry Clay? Well, if you were living in the early 1800s, you would have known about Henry Clay. He was involved even with Jefferson and people like that to some extent in tangling with these politicians. He ran for president four times, and lost. He could never quite get elected. He also was a meddler in foreign affairs in the same way that Hamilton liked to be a meddler, George W. Bush likes to be a meddler, Teddy Roosevelt liked to be a meddler, mess up other people's economies and be an imperialist. That was what Henry Clay was all about as well. So he was truly... What was that noise?
Villains! War masters!
I hear something.
Godless, self-seeking, ambitious tricksters!
You are no more capable of conducting the affairs of this nation than you are of running a brothel.
You are scum,
sir. I'm a truly elected scum of that.
Yes, indeed. Hey, this is the first time I've ever heard of these spots. So you have to pardon me for laughing a little bit. At any rate, you can give Rip and Richie all sorts of accolades for his spot making on the special show today, the Memorial of Villainy. Well, we need to move on to our next villain, which is perhaps in my mind the greatest villain of American history, and that is none other than Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, who was born in 1809. Some people say he was born in North Carolina and actually changed his name later. He might have. Or he was born in Kentucky, either way. And
I thought it was Indiana.
Well, no, I don't think he was born in Indiana. I think it's pretty clear. Most people say he was born in Kentucky. You know, you drive by the interstate there and it tells you, you know, this is the birthplace of Lincoln. You know, the government's pretty sure that he was born in Kentucky, but there's some questions about that. He might have been an illegitimate child, and actually his mother bore him in North Carolina and then quickly moved to Kentucky and raised him there. So
I know he's frequently referred to with another name for an illegitimate child.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's true. I think the Bible uses that same sort of language. But at any rate, yeah, he's at least the political scum of that level, and probably far worse. People know very little about Abraham Lincoln in this day, and it's very unfortunate. There's so much material available to disclose the evil, nefarious acts of Abraham Lincoln that there are so much that's even published, I think, at a rate of 60 books per year about him or about the War of Northern Aggression, which is known as the Civil War. Lincoln, of course, was assassinated in 1865. I think it was a week or so after Robert E. Lee surrendered at Appomattox to General Grant. What were some of his crimes? What are the things you didn't hear about when you went to public school? Well, here's a few of them. And it's a long list, but it's just a few that came to mind at the top of my head. His crimes were as follows. Of course, this is after he was elected with 36% of the vote on splitting the conservative and liberal ends of the Democratic Party. He was the first Republican to be elected president. He was known as a wild leftist all his life, as far as that goes, and at least in his politics, he was not a conservative. We need to abandon that illusion or delusion that people often succumb to because of their public schooling. He promoted the U.S. Central Bank as a congressman. The junior senator or a congressman from Illinois helped Henry Clay in opposing Andrew Jackson and in supporting the bankers and their socialist, globalist kind of interventionist understanding of the world and trying to get their policies through. He was a double-tongued, shifty, lying politician that would change his views according to venue. He was pro-slavery in the bottom of Illinois when he was preaching there and trying to raise votes. And when he went in the Cairo area, for instance, of Illinois, when he went all the way up to Chicago, he was anti-slavery, for instance. And this is well-known, well-recorded. Of course, they didn't have television and internet and so forth to be able to catch him at his words at that time, but we can easily see it now. He suspended the writ of habeas corpus, a constitutional guarantee. People wanted to appeal from being held against their will and without charge and so forth. He suspended people being able to use a writ of habeas corpus and appeal to the Supreme Court of the United States. He simply said to people, it doesn't matter, that's a constitutional right. The Constitution is not going to be enforced now. Because of this and other things, the Supreme Court justices tried to impeach Lincoln. Or tried to call him on the carpet for it. He threatened the Supreme Court Justice Taney with capital punishment. He was going to kill him, execute him for opposing him, this great dictator Lincoln. Lincoln, of course, declared war on the Confederacy without an act of Congress. He went to war when the Constitution clearly said that the Congress is the only one who can declare war. He added a 10th seat to the Congress. Did you know that to the Supreme Court. Did you know the Supreme Court, of course, has had different numbers of members in its history. Early on, it had as few as 5 and as many as 11 members of the Supreme Court, but it pretty much settled down at 9 seats in the middle of the 1800s at some point. Well, Lincoln was not getting his way with the Supreme Court, and note that this is after all the Southern justices left the bench when the South seceded. Those guys resigned their lifetime commitments and went home. They went home. And Lincoln got to fill those seats with Northerners that were sympathetic. Still, he was not able to get through his nefarious policies. He was losing on, 4 to 5 all the time. So he wanted to get a 10th seat and did. During the reign of Abraham Lincoln, there were 10 justices on the Supreme Court, and that's how he was able to get through a lot of his nonsense. So he added that 10th seat. How many people knew that? It's easy to find out. It's all written in history. That's one thing about Lincoln. His works are evident as you just read what he did in his executive orders and the history. It's pretty clear. Now, liberal historians and neocons, they realize this too, but they'll give you excuses like, well, we needed a good dictator at that point in history. We needed to, suspend the Republic and the Constitution for a while. So it was okay what happened. That's what they tell you. He permitted General Butler's right-to-rape order and the cruel atrocities of Sherman's March to the Sea. What was the right-to-rape order? Well, early on in the war, New Orleans was sacked. Of course, this was a main southern port, and the Navy blockaded it and took it over. And the men were out of town. They were off at the war, fighting somewhere else. And so the ladies, not liking the Yankees walking around, would simply empty the chamber pots from the second-story window on top of the passersby, the soldiers down below. Now, this is a pretty disgusting idea. Of course, you know what a chamber pot is. This is before the era of toilets. And so, people who would relieve themselves during the night into these pots, they were then able to be dumped on the soldiers below. Well, this really angered the soldiers, as you can imagine. And because of that, this General Butler was so angry that he issued an order giving the soldiers the right to treat these women, any woman who did this, as a prostitute, and begin, of course, to abuse her sexually as they would. And this is indeed what began to happen. And so this attack on civilians by the soldiers was countenanced by Lincoln, who obviously knew about it and did nothing to stop it, because this is part and parcel of the character of Abraham Lincoln. Some other things that he did had to do with Sherman's March to the Sea and the condoning of this tragic event. After Atlanta fell in 1864, Sherman began going all the way to Savannah, wiping out homes, burning towns, telling old people, women, and children to start walking, and putting people in a condition of starvation, civilians, attacking civilians, raping the women, plundering people for an area at least 60 miles wide, all the way from Atlanta to Savannah, and then up through Columbia and North Carolina until he met with Grant's army up in Virginia. Lincoln countenanced all of this stuff. At the very best, he looked the other way. In reality, he was gleeful and joyful, because this is the kind of character this man had. Now, what modern government in the history of the world relishes and rejoices in attacking civilians? Well, the United States government, perhaps. But what government who is founded on Christian principles would ever do this sort of thing? What virtue is there in going in with the army and raping the women and burning their homes down and telling old people to walk down the street and starve to death? This is the kind of thing that Lincoln and his cronies were gleeful of. And there's some others, like Edwin Stanton we'll talk about in a minute as well, who did the same thing. He exiled or otherwise drove out governments of Maryland and Missouri. Did you know that? He exiled the governments of Maryland and Missouri. Why? Because they both voted to secede. The state governments met and they decided that as southern states, these of course were also slaveholding states, they decided to secede from the Union. Well, Lincoln could never have Maryland doing that, because then the capital would be isolated, of course. Virginia had already seceded. And so he wasn't about to let that happen. So after they met, Lincoln simply sent his troops, nabbed them all, sent them to a prison in New York without being charged, held them in prison for 4 years. If you want any reference on this, simply get Thomas J. DiLorenzo's The Real Lincoln book, and you'll read all the gory details about that act. Well, Missouri tried to also secede from the Union, and as soon as he did, Lincoln sent in federal troops, and he installed a new government there, and he drove the legitimate, so-called legitimate government of Missouri down to Marshall, Texas, right near Texarkana and Longview and all that area of eastern Texas, where they lived in exile throughout the war, and of course eventually disbanded after the North won. But this is what Lincoln did in driving out legitimate governors. There's so much more to talk about here, and we're going to when we return from a break. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, a special edition, A Memorial of Villainy, a special edition of Christian Worldview, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
Marquis de Sade said, "Social order at the expense of liberty is hardly a bargain."
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome to a special Memorial Day edition of Christian Worldview. On today's show, we reflect upon the legacies of 8 of America's most influential political leaders: Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Edwin Stanton, Ulysses S. Grant, Nelson Aldrich, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson. These men did their best to undermine our Constitution, shed innocent blood, and destroy the foundation of our once great nation. Now they have gone on to their eternal reward. Proverbs 10:7. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Proverbs 11:10. When it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting.
And we are shouting because of the, you know, God takes no pleasure in the death of the wicked, we are told in the Scriptures. But the Scriptures also say, when the wicked perish, there is jubilation or shouting. And we are shouting this morning, not because we are glorying in the death of the wicked, but because we're so glad to be relieved of evil men. Now, unfortunately, there are many more evil men that still lurk in our governments or state today, but nevertheless, it's also good for us to remember, I suppose, something about the nature of these beasts that have lived in the past, such as Abraham Lincoln we've been talking about, and discuss his evil so that we can learn the truth about history and about our great nation here in America. It's currently 59 or 60 degrees in Greenville. It's going to be
56.
It's 56. Oh, excuse me. In Greenville, and probably depending on where you are, give or take another degree or two. It's going to have light rain all day today, this Memorial Day, and tomorrow as well. So any picnics you had planned are probably canceled. So you might as well just relax and don't have to get so hurried to get ready to go out now. You can just enjoy the Christian Worldview program this morning on our Memorial of Villainy, our special Memorial of Villainy. We don't have nothing against the truth. We don't have anything against the truth. I'm having trouble here speaking. We don't have anything against our troops today, who we are very supportive of people who wear the uniform in general. We're not opposed to people who are in the profession of arms, and we're not trying to disparage in any way those who have lost their lives fighting for their country, especially those Confederates who fell trying to fight against the War of Northern Aggressors, the Yankees who invaded. But certainly, we want to use this day to remember things in a different way, perhaps, a memorial of villainy. We want to promote the ideas for people that they haven't heard in public schools. What is it about the villains of history that made America change and lose its nature as a great republic that the founders envisioned? We've been talking about Abraham Lincoln, who I think is probably the greatest villain of American history, the greatest criminal. He promoted the wishes of the war governors. Of course, the war between the states, really the war of Yankee aggression or the war for Southern independence, was begun because the South, by seceding, eliminated effectively the tariff barrier. Now, the South produced at least two-thirds of all of the goods and services that were exported to other countries, cotton and tobacco primarily, and because of that, ended up paying a disproportionate share of government expenditures. In addition to that, because the protectionist states in the North wanted them to buy goods from the North rather than cheaper goods from Europe, they raised this tariff up to force the South to buy from them. By seceding, they would lose their greatest customer because they really couldn't compete on the world market. And these war governors assembled and said to Lincoln, "We need to get together right now and attack the South, force them to stay in the Union. Otherwise, we're going to lose our tariff and lose our ability to produce these goods and sell them to the South." Of course, that was done at any rate by destroying the South. But at the time, that's what their initial wishes were. These seven war governors got together, and Lincoln did the bidding of big business. At any rate, we talked about a number of things. I'm going to move on here with some more things that Lincoln did. He also exiled editors and anyone else who opposed him. If a newspaper began to disparage Lincoln and his policies, he ordered that the U.S. Postal Service, which should not be a function of the civil government or the state, for that matter, should not deliver the newspapers of any of these editors, and therefore silence them. If they continued to be vociferous and loud, he would go up and round them up. One of them was even exiled to Canada. He would threaten them, go and beat them, send the troops over to harass them, anybody in the news who would try to oppose him, effectively silencing all opposition to Lincoln in the North. Yes, there were many Northerners who were sympathetic to the Southern cause and to secession, for that matter. Remember, just 30 years earlier, New England tried to secede or thought about seceding from the Union, and there wasn't this kind of problem. But with Lincoln at the helm and him wanting his strong central control and power, he wasn't going to let it happen, and certainly not anybody who had a different opinion than his be allowed to either live, speak, or certainly freely disseminate that view. Again, a lot of this stuff is in The Real Lincoln, as well as other books. It's not the first book to reveal this to the modern public school brainwashed person, that what Lincoln did to the editors of papers. Lincoln was also duplicitous on the slavery issue, wanting to deport blacks to the West Indies or to Liberia. He didn't care about black people. In fact, in some places he said they should be enslaved. They're an inferior race and so forth. There's even that quote we read frequently on Christian Worldview that's embrazoned or down in Charleston at the federal monument there near Fort Sumter, which says that to the effect, look, these are an inferior, second-class kind of people. There may be human beings, but they always need to be in some sort of condition of servitude one way or another, and I don't really want anything to do with them. Disgusted by the black people, Lincoln said. And so he wanted to get rid of them. He didn't want to kill them keep them in slavery in the South necessarily. He just wanted them to all be deported on boats to either the West Indies or to Liberia. Now, of course, this was hard to do because there were, 3 or 4 million of them on small wooden ships. That was not an easy task, but that was his goal. He remembered that he only freed slaves in the states in rebellion, where he had no authority to do so. If you read the Emancipation Proclamation, let this be a good assignment for you Lincoln lovers today, you who've been deceived about this man. Go and pick up a copy of the Emancipation Proclamation that he issued in the middle of the war, the war for Southern independence, and read what it says. Who and where did he free the slaves? He only freed them in the 11 Southern states that had seceded and were considered in rebellion to him, and excluded those portions of those states where there was federal control, such as right around Charleston or right around New Orleans and a few other places in the South. So even places in the South, the slaves were not free. And in Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, Delaware, and what would later become West Virginia, all of those people who owned slaves were allowed to keep them. They were not freed in any northern state. Is that shocking to you? Well, it should be shocking to you because we've been deceived and tricked by government indoctrination. But this is pretty easy to figure out. The Emancipation Proclamation is online, easy to get a copy of. Go and do a Google search for it and read the thing and see what happened to slaves in Kentucky, Maryland, Missouri, Delaware, and what would later become West Virginia. Nothing. They were still enslaved. Why did Lincoln free only the southern slaves and the states where he had no control anymore because those states had seceded? Because he wanted to incite a rebellion, obviously. He wanted to stir up trouble and insurrection. He wanted to do his best to undermine the efforts of the Confederacy to leave. So if Lincoln was so concerned about slaves, then why didn't he free him where he had the easiest opportunity to do so in those states which were loyal or at least under control of Lincoln? Of course, we know that Maryland and Missouri were not really loyal. He forced them to stay in the Union by disbanding their government or imprisoning it. When in New York. Well, we have more to talk about Lincoln. This Lincoln stuff can go on forever because the guy was just said so many bad things. He started the use of executive orders against the balance of powers doctrine in the Constitution. He was the first one who decided that in mass he could issue these orders and effectively put things into law that Congress had not passed. That he was the guy. He disregarded the Bill of Rights frequently, not only the Tenth Amendment, where states were reserved certain powers and the state authority and autonomy, but also search and seizure. And, of course, we've already mentioned he suspended the writ of habeas corpus. He allowed all sorts of things that were in direct violation of the Bill of Rights. He violated the Constitution in so many ways it is mind-boggling, including allowing West Virginia to be carved out of Virginia. Did you realize that was illegal? That a state has to itself divide. The federal government cannot come in and divide a state and pull off the western counties of Virginia and say you're going to become your own state. Lincoln did that. Lincoln also used the greenback fiat currency. He allowed a currency to be issued, a scrip, during the war that was not backed by gold. He did that all on his own. He's always loved central banking, as we know from his early time as a congressman, but he was the one who initiated this sort of currency as well, a non-gold-backed currency. He allowed favoritism in conscription, offering the rich a way to buy their way out of conscription. This caused a great revolt in New York City, where thousands of Irishmen who were poor and couldn't afford to pay the $300 commutation fee walked around with placards saying, "Up with Jeff Davis." And as a result, Lincoln sent in his troops and killed 1,000 Irishmen during the riots in New York. New York City was actually a southern state for a while there, folks. Indeed, people in New York were not in favor, and many of the people in New York were not in favor of the Lincolnite doctrine and the Lincolnite plans. How many people knew about that? Up with Jeff Davis. Can you imagine marching down the streets of New York with that, up with Jeff Davis signs? And actually, nothing that happens in New York should surprise us, so it really isn't that shocking, perhaps. At any rate, he also conscripted people in Europe, not conscripted, he offered people in Europe who were poor an opportunity to come over here and fight the battle. He couldn't get enough troops to come in and invade the South from the North, still, even with his conscription policy, so he went over to Europe through his ambassador, William Seward, and he said to Seward, "Go to Paris, invite people to come here. I'm going to have the Congress pass the Homestead Act," which he did. And the Homestead Act allowed a lot of land to become available for free if you simply would go into the West and settle it. You know how it is. You pay a buck after 7 years or some such thing of improvements on the land. And he said to them, "If you come fight for us for a year and fight the South, we'll give you some free land." Yes, the Homestead Act was passed while the South had seceded, when you had the Republican-dominated Congress, in order to attract primarily foreigners to come and fight. In the victorious armies of General Stonewall Jackson in the South, when he had captured the Union troops, he found that about one half of the people that were captured could not speak English. One half. This is how successful it was in bringing people, these poor people from Europe who had no prospect of a good life there. They were willing to come over here, potentially fight and die for the Union army just so they could get their free land in the West.
Just half?
Half.
That's as bad as a motel.
Yeah, I think so.
The staff at a motel.
Yeah, or a university or a lot of other places nowadays. But anyway, yeah, this is little known facts about Lincoln. Aren't these things shocking to you? As a Christian, they should be shocking to you. It should really bother you what's going on here. Are we at another break already? I'm not even done with Lincoln yet. We've already gone through a break. Well, I knew Lincoln would be longer than the others. All right, we'll go to a quick break. When we come back, we'll have some more mind-boggling revelations about Abraham Lincoln, this great American villain, the greatest of them all. And you've been listening to a special Memorial Day presentation, Memorial of Villainy, here on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
Are you sick of all those gospel groups that only sing about God's love and mercy, and never about God's judgment? Well, Wrath Records is proud to introduce the Imprecatory Praise Quartet.
Break their teeth in their mouth, oh God. Break their teeth in their mouth, oh God. Pull out their fangs and crush their heads. Break their teeth in their mouth, oh God.
Enjoy the soothing sounds of the Imprecatory Praise Quartet.
Oh Lord.
That's right.
Send down.
Brother,
huh? Whoa, Lord.
That's right, send down the rain.
Send down the rain.
Yeah.
Rain fiery coals.
Huh? What?
And burning sulfur.
Burning sulfur.
Check out the Imprecatory Praise Quartet's latest album, Judgment and Harmony. Call 1-800-YOU-REPENT and get your free copy of the Divine Curses Bible.
We're back here live on Christian Worldview in a special Memorial Day celebration or warning called Memorial of Villainy. We've talked about two villains so far, and we're going to have to speed up so we can get them all through here today. Abraham Lincoln is our current topic. We've already done Henry Clay earlier on the show. What else about Abraham Lincoln is there need that we need to know about this great villain and criminal of American history? Well, he waged war on civilians, as we saw in Sherman's March to the Sea and elsewhere, did in the Shenandoah Valley. Anywhere he could go, he waged war on civilians through his men. Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, we'll read about him next, as well as his crew of nasty generals. He earned the title of the Great Centralizer and Dictator by historians, because that's what he was. He was an American dictator. He was hardly a president. He stomped on states' rights. He favored high tariffs and plundering people by taxation in general. He and his radical Republican cronies in Congress and his cabinet, especially Edwin Stanton, dismantled free America and brought us into a condition of slavery to the state. He allowed a revision of history and the radical alteration of the Jeffersonian principles and the Declaration of Independence, secession in particular. Remember, Jefferson told us that when it's no longer convenient to be governed, it's the right of the people to be able to secede. And Lincoln denied that. He, of course, he admitted it, actually. He confessed that early when he was a congressman, but later turned and denied the exact same thing he said, or negated what he said earlier. He did many, many more evil acts. We can't even go and talk about them all in just a few-minute segment here on Christian Worldview. This is, by far, in my view, the most evil president we've ever had, for no other reason that he took America, the greatest nation on earth, and destroyed it. He brought us into a condition that repudiated effectively all the guarantees and virtues in the Constitution, and he was very duplicitous on this whole argument about slavery. It's pretty clear to me that slavery was not the fundamental cause of the war of Northern aggression, the war between the states, or whatever you want to say. It was clearly these other things which brought that catastrophe on this country, and Lincoln's drive for his own power and dictatorial rule. But nevertheless, if Lincoln would have lived, I guess, for as long as Franklin Roosevelt lived, it would have been very clear that he was the most evil president that we'd had. Now, and Franklin Roosevelt is number two in my mind. I don't have much... Frankly, there was a lot of jubilation, I'm sure, when this man died in the ranks of those who love liberty, both Lincoln and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Let's go on here to Secretary of Defense Edwin M. Stanton. He lived from 1814 to 1869. His crimes, including using government to help business, much like Henry Clay and Lincoln envisioned, he supplanted Jeffersonian ideals with the idea of union at all cost. He did not like the idea of secession, obviously guaranteed in the Declaration of Independence. He helped to destroy free America. He waged a brutal war against civilians, disregarded the Constitution. He may have been more evil than Lincoln himself, although he
no
wasn't.
No way.
Yeah, I think he could have been. There's a book I read on Edwin Stanton called Mr. Secretary, which evinces from his own writing, his own notes, just a copy some out of his diary, what was really in this guy's heart. And he was brutal and nasty. The kind of war he allowed to be waged.
But it was for the greater good.
Yeah, he was. If you're an anthill type, yes. Yes, knock off 30% of the ants so the other 70% can live a better life. Sounds like people who support abortion and any kind of euthanasia or Marxian doctrine. Well, this was the forerunner, this Edwin Stanton fellow. In the book called The South is Right, page 283, there were quotations from reports sent to Stanton about the army in western Missouri, and this is what it says. They are no better than a band of robbers. They cross the line, rob, steal, plunder, and burn whatever they can lay their hands upon. Plus, the most terrible outrages, robberies, rapes, arsons, and plundering are being committed by lawless brigands and vagabonds connected with the army. Secretary of Defense Edwin Stanton knew about this behavior of the army, and he applauded it. He wanted to scourge the South so badly that civilians would be molested and attacked. This was part of his plan. He had no love for the South. He had a love for strong centralized government, or even a state, I should say, that controlled people's lives. And this is what Edwin Stanton was all about. Now, he didn't like Lincoln very much. At one time, he called Lincoln a baboon, and McCormick often made fun of him as being some sort of an imbecile. And perhaps Lincoln was, to some extent. Perhaps he truly was controlled by other people. I don't know. All I can say is that the man actually did the acts was Lincoln, and for that matter, as far as I'm concerned, he is the one who is the most evil. Maybe Stanton was behind pushing a lot of his stuff and utilizing Lincoln in such a way, but nevertheless, Lincoln was evil, and Stanton was his right hand man for doing all sorts of wicked things here in America. Stanton disregarded completely the Constitution. He had no love or concern for the principles of liberty and freedom. He was a centralist par excellence. Even when Andrew Johnson took over after Lincoln's assassination, Stanton caused all sorts of trouble for Johnson. In fact, 11 of the 13 counts that the House wanted to impeach Stanton or Johnson on had to do with his dismissal of Stanton. And finally, Johnson, of course, was impeached. And it largely had to do with the outcry caused by this man who had become so powerful. Some people say that Stanton actually was behind the assassination of Lincoln. It's not real clear that that's the case. In fact, if you read the Mr. Secretary book, it doesn't look like he was. But he might have been. I mean, this was a really brutal man that would stop at nothing at having a strong central state and cared nothing for the principles and rights of the Constitution that are guaranteed to Americans. All right, that's all I'm going to say about him because we need to move on. I've still got a bunch more tyrants to go through today. And you who wrote in and said, well, why don't you talk about my favorite tyrant, House? Now you can see why. We don't have time.
There's always next year.
You know, we can always do something else next year, right? Or maybe on maybe we'll do something on Veterans Day. I don't know. Maybe on the 4th of July we'll bring up a few of these guys. Well, who's the next villain? The next one
is
Ulysses S. Grant. Yes, great General Grant, 1822 to 1885, who also became president, a two-term president after Andrew Johnson was done. Why is he on the list of villains? What were his crimes? Well, he attacked the South, did his duty in an aggressive war of butchery and cruelty. In this particular war, remember, Grant's method of beating Lee, who was quite obviously the superior general, there's not much question about that historically, even by scholars in the North. What happened was Grant realized he couldn't beat him, so he just got more and more of these recruits from Europe or elsewhere and just threw them at Lincoln at places like Cold Harbor, where he would lose.
Lee. Threw them at Lee.
He threw them at Lee. Grant threw them at him to the point where he was losing five men to every Southerner that was killed. And it wasn't just because the Southerners were such better soldiers, although those hardened Southern soldiers probably were better than the green Yankee recruits that were being thrown at him. But Grant stopped at nothing strategically to take any risk, because he knew he had an unlimited supply of bodies. He had no regard for human life and could care less about the religious convictions of or religious principles of the Bible. He did attend church with his wife at a Methodist church, but he'd never joined, as his wife did. It's not real clear that he had any true faith whatsoever. Nevertheless, this was the man's modus operandi. He would throw out men as just in a battle of carnage. People, I think Lincoln's wife even called Grant the butcher, because he would just sacrifice men at a whim. As long as he could win the battle, it didn't matter how many people had to be slaughtered. He just didn't care. A careless, nasty man that he was in his generalry and his dealings as a military leader. He promulgated, of course, the whole event of Reconstruction and permitted confiscation of the property of 70,000 cotton barons in the South. One of the greatest acts that Lincoln did and that Edwin Stanton promoted and Lincoln or Grant carried out further was the first and then the second Confiscation Act. Go look them up on your internet search for Google. Type in Confiscation Act. Doesn't that sound bad? If the federal government passed a Confiscation Act today, wouldn't you be worried? Well, if you were a Southerner, you were, because they used it to confiscate all Southern property and bring it into the realm of the federal government, the federal regime. Well, under Ulysses S. Grant and the whole Reconstruction movement with the Freedmen's Bureau, which is also known as the Bureau of Refugees, Freedmen, and Abandoned Lands, from March 3rd, 1865, and went through 1872, the North was able to take away or expropriate the property, the real property of Southerners. And Grant did this. To his credit, Grant did stop the execution of Robert E. Lee and some of the Southern leaders because he wanted to honor the Treaty of Appomattox. He had that much honor in him. We'll give him credit for that. But what he did to the South afterward was just horrible, heinous, debilitated the South completely, eliminated and ruined its government. Anybody who was a white person who supported the so-called rebellion wasn't allowed to vote. Puppet governments were set up everywhere, ruled by military dictators appointed through General Grant's regime, and for 20 years, 24 years, or sorry, 14 years, terrorized the South and brought it into complete subjection or subjugation of the North. In fact, Georgia's gross national product for that state, that gross state product, did not return to its 1859 level until 1911. I mean, the whole South was decimated and destroyed by Reconstruction. It was a horrible period of time, and General Grant deserves an accolade as being one of the greatest villains of history because of Reconstruction, what he did. At any rate, we're not going to have time to continue to talk about him too much more. Just remember the 70,000 people, so-called barons, who owned cotton in the South, that were completely raped and plundered by General Grant. And who got their property? Well, sometimes it was ex-slaves. Sometimes it was people from the North who just wanted to get a little windfall at the end of the war, the booty. And they would come down to the South and just take over Southern lands and control them for their own purposes. This is the legacy of Ulysses S. Grant. Well, we've come up to a break. It's a good time for a break because we've got three more scoundrels we'll try to fit into the next half hour on our special Memorial Day edition, Memorial of Villainy, May 30th, 2005. You're listening to Dr. John Coben, and this is Christian Worldview. We'll be back in just a minute. This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics.
You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Welcome to a special Memorial Day edition of Christian Worldview. On today's show, we reflect upon the legacies of eight of America's most influential political leaders: Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Edwin Stanton, Ulysses S. Grant, Nelson Aldrich, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson. These men did their best to undermine our Constitution, shed innocent blood, and destroy the foundation of our once great nation. Now they have gone on to their eternal reward. Proverbs 10:7. The memory of the just is blessed, but the name of the wicked shall rot. Proverbs 11:10, when it goeth well with the righteous, the city rejoiceth, and when the wicked perish, there is shouting.
And as you can tell, we are shouting here today as the names of these wicked men are rotting. Did you realize how many people Lincoln, through Edwin Stanton and Ulysses S. Grant, killed? 630,000 Americans are dead as a result, and how many? Who knows how many thousands or hundreds of thousands or more were maimed and wounded by these brutal, wicked people who undermined American liberty and our Constitution. We've got four more of these terrible people to talk about and memorialize on this special Memorial of Villainy on Memorial Day 2005. But before we get to that, we have Ben on the line who just called in and wants to talk about some of his favorite villains, and we'd like to welcome you, Ben, to Christian Worldview.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm glad you listed Lincoln as the worst, but before I list FDR as second, I'd want to put my second villain in there, and that's Woodrow Wilson. Think about what Woodrow Wilson gave us. He gave us World War One under phony pretenses,
mm-hmm.
And if you study the history of the Lusitania, what was going on there, you find out that that was all about bailing out J.P. Morgan and company. He gave us the Federal Reserve, which is not federal, and there is no reserve. The international bankers controlling our economy at that point in time, gave us the 16th Amendment, the famed and beloved income tax amendment, which was not ratified by a single state, and yet Wilson and his Secretary of State, Philander Knox, and their buddy, their handler there, Edward M. House, told us it had been ratified. He tried to give us the League of Nations. Thank goodness we still had a somewhat independent Senate, but they took that away from us with the 17th Amendment, which was also not ratified by a single state. Of course, my favorite quote from Wilson has to do with the government school system. It's when he said to a bunch of businessmen before World War One, we want one class to have a liberal education. We want another class, a very much larger class of necessity, to forego the privilege of a liberal education and fit themselves to perform specific, difficult, manual tasks. So Wilson was just giving us takeover completely by the international bankers. And so Wilson's up there with the bad guys, just behind Lincoln in my book.
Well, I really appreciate the comment and the call, Ben. You, of course, he's number three on my list, but he's not far behind FDR. And, of course, I could be swayed. You've got a good point, and you're making a great case for why Wilson should be up there. Appreciate the call this morning.
Thank you.
All right, and we're going to move on here. Thanks so much for that call, Ben. We're going to talk about him in just a minute, Woodrow Wilson. In fact, Ben basically stole all the good stuff I was going to mention about Wilson, but I'll quickly go through and review some of that stuff. Before we get to him, let's go in chronological order and hit Senator Nelson Aldrich. Senator Nelson Aldrich, of course, was a sellout of the big banking empire, including Rockefeller and Morgan and some other folks, especially Rockefeller. His greatest crime, he lived from 1841 to 1915 as senator, was to promote and coordinate the Federal Reserve Act. He was the one that coordinated the Jekyll Island meeting in Jekyll Island, Georgia, which actually set up the central bank in the United States that eventually, when FDR had his opportunity 20 years afterward, would eliminate gold from being used as money in the United States and allow government unlimited power to inflate and to control the economy through the currency. This Senator Nelson Aldrich was a big proponent of the Federal Reserve and a lackey for big business and using the state for its own benefit. So today on this special Memorial Day, a memorial of villainy, we want to remember Senator Aldrich for bringing us the central bank, the Federal Reserve System. Again, folks, behind the public school, our greatest enemy, our second greatest enemy, I think, in this nation, is the Federal Reserve System. It's the backbone of government power. It's what gives government its money and its ability to cripple the economy on a whim or to change the economic well-being of the economy. This is the great power the government has attained through this private corporation, the Federal Reserve, and Nelson Aldrich goes down as one of the greatest villains simply because he did that act alone. Now let's come up quickly then to Woodrow Wilson, who Ben just talked about. Woodrow Wilson lived from 1856 to 1924. His crimes included being the instigator of the League of Nations that Ben mentioned. This, of course, was the forerunner of the United Nations that would come into being under Franklin Delano Roosevelt. The League of Nations was a socialist, globalist organization that attempted to undermine, and has successfully done so over the years, the sovereignty of the United States and the Constitution of the United States. And he is responsible for bringing in this sort of globalism. He's also responsible for the Espionage Act. A lot of people don't know about the Espionage Act. This is what the Espionage Act was all about, passed in 1917. It became a crime to utter, print, write, or publish any disloyal, profane, scurrilous, or abusive language about the form of government of the United States, or the military or naval forces of the United States, or the flag. The act also targeted those who might urge, incite, or advocate any curtailment of the production in this country of anything or things necessary or essential to the conduct of the war. That's World War I. In fact, the Espionage Act could even make it illegal to teach, suggest, defend, or advocate any criticism of the government. What a deal, huh? This sounds almost like what George W. Bush is trying to get again through the Patriot Act. This is what Wilson was all about. He used the Espionage Act, trying to keep spies out, much like Bush tries to keep terrorists out, in order to silence anybody who would oppose him. Now, Lincoln, of course, also silenced people that opposed him. Remember I mentioned earlier, he just put him in jail or exiled them, ran them off. Well, here, like all great leftist dictator types, Woodrow Wilson passed the Espionage Act here in America. He thrust the Americans into World War I after saying that he would not do so in his first run. And, of course, Ben just mentioned some of the things going on behind the attack on the Lusitania and all this nonsense of what was going on in Europe with Archduke Ferdinand and his wife Sophia being shot in Serbia, these pretenders to the throne of the Austrian Empire. There was a lot of stuff going on, a lot of scam going on over in Europe at that time, and Woodrow Wilson played along the part quite well in getting us involved in a war we had no business being involved with, and, by the way, benefiting international banking interests and other people who could make a profit on the war on both sides. Woodrow Wilson facilitated all of that. He did indeed not oppose the Federal Reserve Act or the 16th Amendment. Those evils that were recently thrust upon America, Wilson upheld completely. He supported them. And these things have been great evils that we have faced. So Woodrow Wilson, yes, a great criminal in American history, and it deserves a spot high in the ranks of greatest villains in American history. Woodrow Wilson. I believe he was also Virginian, by the way. Sad that the state... I may be mistaken about, but I think he was. That the state which produced James Madison and Thomas Jefferson and George Mason would eventually produce the likes of Woodrow Wilson. Let's move on to another great villain, since he's going to take so much time. Well, he might not be able to take so much time. We'll do the best we can. And this is the beloved president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, 1882 to 1945. What were this man's crimes? You've all heard that he was a good guy, helped us get rid of Hitler in World War II. Well, it wasn't all shining and wonderful what this man did, I'm afraid. Again, the revisionists have had the upper hand when they talk about what he actually did. Franklin Roosevelt, what are his crimes? Well, he brought us into World War II deceptively. He lied often to the American people, and historians have picked out many of his lies. Of course, for state presidents anymore to lie is not a big deal. People knew that Clinton lied, for instance. It didn't really bother them. And they probably aren't going to be too bothered that Franklin Roosevelt lied to them. Roosevelt most likely, as far as I can tell, knew all about Pearl Harbor and the likelihood of the Japanese attack there. What wanted an excuse to bring us into World War II. Now, I'm not a full-fledged conspiracy theorist, as you know, but I'll listen to all sorts of points of view. And I'll have to say that the argument in favor of FDR knowing about Pearl Harbor seems pretty strong. You may have a different opinion and want to call the show to discuss that. Remember, our phone number today, and I've been giving the phone number enough, it's 864-201-6955 or 849-0277. That's 849-0277. Give us a call on either of those lines if you want to discuss or add to any of these issues we're bringing up today on this special memorial of villainy. Franklin is better known for, even beyond those things, of his warlike nature and his union with people like who he called Uncle Joe, Stalin. I mean, he was actually, you know, in bed with the fascists like Mussolini and Stalin in Europe to some extent for a long time. He brought socialism and a form of fascism to America. He expanded the temporary income tax, seized everyone's gold in 1933. Yes, this is the president who declared it illegal to own gold. And until Richard M. Nixon actually removed that restriction in 1974, a person who was not a jeweler or had no industrial purpose for owning gold could not own gold in the United States. How many people knew that? Well, Franklin Roosevelt is the one who confiscated all the gold, and everybody turned it in dutifully to their president at that time.
Did they get paid for it?
Well, they got paper money in return from the Federal Reserve.
Oh, great deal, huh?
Yeah. Well, apparently they didn't mind at the time, bizarre as it might be. If they did, they just still did it dutifully. He tripled.
Well, the people that didn't do it, you're not going to hear from them.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They're not going to say anything.
Right. It's a good point, but most people did. The government succeeded in taking away everybody's gold. He also tripled taxes and destroyed food during the Great Depression. He started the Great Depression through the Federal Reserve bungling and promoted it through his tariff policies and other things. But Franklin Roosevelt tripled taxes, the greatest crisis of American history economically, and then actually paid farmers to plow under their crops. When their food was expensive and they couldn't get food, he tried to support farmers, and so by supporting farmers, he tried to reduce their output, increasing the prices. So he taxed people to pay the farmers not to grow crops, plowed the crops under, so that people's starvation was hunger became even worse. This is what Franklin Roosevelt did. He also started Social Security, this great retirement Ponzi scheme that we have, modeled on the German Otto von Bismarck's policy, as so many immigrants began to clamor for some government or state pension. Franklin Roosevelt began this Ponzi scheme, which now beleaguers us today and is about to go bankrupt. The pay-as-you-go system, as we all know, he brought that socialist system here to America. He also attempted
the National Industrial Recovery Act, a communist-styled intervention into the economy where government would control prices, control production to some extent, and he indeed failed to get exactly what he wanted through the National Industrial Recovery Act, but it did show his hand in what he was really all about, a socialist, or what Flynn calls, John T. Flynn, in his Roosevelt Myth book, or As We Go Marching, his two great comments. He was a journalist of the era. He called him America's fascist. It wasn't much difference than between Roosevelt and Hitler at the bottom. I see we have a caller coming in, and we'll get to you in just a quick second. Roosevelt also tried to get a 10th seat on the Supreme Court. He wasn't successful like Lincoln was in getting that 10th seat on the Supreme Court, but he tried. He did cause another deeper depression in 1938 that prolonged the one that was going on since 1921, and his New Deal, so-called New Deal, created higher unemployment than when he took office in 1932. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was really the one who built upon the Lincolnite destruction of the Constitution by promoting socialism and a fascist kind of governance here in the United States, and he deserves place at least as number three, in my book, number two, greatest villains in American history, a true criminal. And you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're going to be coming up to a quick break in just
skip
a minute.
Skip the break.
Oh, we're going to skip the break?
Why not?
Well, it doesn't bother me.
What are they
going to
do?
You. Okay, all right.
So sue me. We're skipping the break. Let's take the call.
Well, maybe Franklin Roosevelt will be upset, or his cronies.
I hope he's spinning.
Okay, all right. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning, Dr. Coben. It's Paul from Cummings, Georgia.
Oh, hello, Paul. Thanks so much for calling this morning. Welcome to the show. I hope you're enjoying
for another informative educational...
Well, I hope you're enjoying the Memorial of Villainy. This is a special Memorial Day edition of Christian Worldview, where we're talking about some of the greatest villains in American history. So I assume you've been listening, and I hope it's been enjoyable for you. What's on your mind?
Well, I just had a quick comment, observation maybe for the so-called Memorial Day. You know, holiday, everybody's going to be barbecuing and playing in the pool, having fun in the sun, and the government's still killing... You know, on the one hand, they pretend to honor the fallen soldiers, and on the other hand, they're putting them in harm's way, just so a few people can, few well-connected industrialists can be making profits off their blood and their sweat. Hmm. They always have a good time on Memorial Day. You know, all 140 places all over the world that they have our troops, And they're probably clueless. The troops are probably clueless. Although the generals and colonels and what have probably not. But it's just more hypocrisy. Just like to make a memorial and FDR, like you've just been talking about. I just want to interject to people to read Medley Butler's War's Racket. He was a Marine Corps general, and he learned about the conspiracy later on in life, and he petitioned for the peace amendment, the so-called peace amendment. And that was just my comment for the day, just to sober people up on a happy Memorial Day.
Well, we appreciate that. And again, we don't want to disparage in any way the American troops. Most American troops do not listen to Christian Worldview, or probably read, for that matter. We realize that most of them went to public schools and have been duped into going to get a good job in the military, get some training there. They don't even realize that they're fighting for a globalist socialist empire by George W. Bush, and so we don't hold anything against troops themselves for the most part. There may be some who really know.
I was a troop, you know, personally. Yeah. I mean, I was a clueless, I went in after, you know, early 20s, just like you said, think you're going to go to training and you're fighting for your country, but just the furthest, I mean, sure, they'll train you, but, and continue the brainwashing that the public full system, I mean, the government school, and public school system does, but you know, I mean, the troops are there. They're young. You can't blame them for being young, but I can sure blame the lieutenant colonels, the colonels, lieutenant generals, the major generals. They know what the score is. Of course, our representatives in Congress, the Pentagon officials, they all know what they're doing, and they lie to us with every breath, and they're treasonous with every word, And people, since it is Memorial Day, I figured why not interject some more pessimism in your show.
Well, we appreciate that, and like we say, our focus, there's so many people focusing on troops today and those who died in the service for the United States government in these different wars, and we appreciate that comment, Paul. Not trying to put that in second place today at all, just wanted to give a different spin on Memorial Day as we memorialize the villains.
Well, the troops are doing their duty, and they're really not to blame. Like I said, I was a clueless, a pawn in the game, just like so many others. But again, it's Memorial Day, and if you're supposed to honor the troops, is it a shallow thing, or do you really want to understand what's going on?
Appreciate the call very much, Paul. Look forward to hearing from you again soon. All right. Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. And this is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, a special Memorial Day edition called The Memorial of Villainy. We've been talking about all sorts of villains today, Henry Clay, Abraham Lincoln, Edwin Stanton, Ulysses S. Grant, Nelson Aldrich, Woodrow Wilson, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and we've come up to our last villain, Lyndon Baines Johnson. You know, your children should remember all of these names, especially if you're a homeschooling family. The most evil men in American history, who are they? Well, you should have them memorize this list and know a little bit why. Of course, you can always get this show on its recorded version. It will be on the tyrannyresponse.com webpage shortly today, and it will be available for all of them to listen to. They can understand a bit. Quick soundbite, an hour and a half version of the six most evil, or six of the most evil Americans to have ever lived and control us as far as the state is concerned. Lyndon Baines Johnson. Yes, I'll take Al Capone any day over any of these guys. Let him run amok. Let him make some bucks. Let him kill one or two people. It just pales by comparison. Even if he kills 100 or 200 people, to any of these government or state scumbags that we're reading about today. Lyndon Baines Johnson, the president, Lyndon Baines Johnson, took over after Kennedy was assassinated. Many people think he was complicit in assassinating John F. Kennedy, might have been, for all I know. John F. Kennedy, of course, opposing the Federal Reserve System at the end, might have been the reason he was killed. Some people theorize, don't know for sure, although it certainly seems like there was some conspiracy up with that killing. If anybody visits Dallas and goes to National Books or Texas Books Depository. There's still 450,000 visitors a year to that site, and people making a lot of money selling pamphlets out front because there's just so much doubt about the Warren Commission and the single bullet theory and all that, and for good reason. Certainly looks like somebody who knew that Kennedy was being killed, whether it be the CIA, the Mafia, Johnson, or the mayor of Dallas, I don't know. Anyway, he, again, born in 1908, lived in 1973. His crimes included the Great Society Campaign, the War on Poverty, bolstering the health or the Housing and Urban Development Department, and the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964, the Social Security Act of 1965 with Medicare and Medicaid. He also fostered the Vietnam War of Aggression. These were his great crimes. Now, I realize he's not as much a criminal as some of the others we've mentioned, but he still is a criminal. Why? Because he further expanded and extended beyond the wildest dreams of socialist Franklin Delano Roosevelt ideas of the Marxian philosophy, and these included helping people get out of poverty. Now, of course, there are far more people in poverty today, far more than there were under Lyndon Baines Johnson and his programs, because welfare doesn't work. But Johnson really brought us welfare as we have it today. And not only welfare, but things like Section 8 housing, subsidies, and special medical benefits for the elderly. These things which beleaguer the American economy today, which cost us so much in terms of increased taxes and losses of liberties. Lyndon Baines Johnson, or LBJ, was responsible for fomenting all of these things. Now, we're not trying to exonerate any of the members of Congress that allowed this stuff to pass. We're just saying that these presidents, like Roosevelt and Lincoln, had the main idea, the main thrust, the main lobby for these bills, and became dictators, especially Lincoln and FDR, in their own right, and Wilson, for that matter. The Congress, sure, there were some people who dissented. They're all culpable, too, who voted for or in favor of these kinds of policies, and they need to also be recognized as very evil men. But I think we need to point out the ringleader, the big guy, on this program today as we make a memorial of villainy. And certainly LBJ has to go down as one of the greatest villains in history for his work in promoting socialism in America. Lyndon Baines Johnson was the father, or I guess the progenitor of all sorts of newfangled socialist ideas, which grew up after World War II in the American Academy. People that had all sorts of great ideas for how the state could save society and stop poverty and things like that. Johnson implemented those things through his particular policies. He also got us involved with the Vietnam War. Now, again, we have nothing against the troops who went over there, not realizing what they were fighting for, what was really going on. But as we look back in history and now see Vietnam struggling to become a new capitalist economy, and Ho Chi Minh wasn't all that it was cracked up to be and so forth, we began to realize that the 50,000 or so Americans that were killed over there were killed to promote something other than the stopping of communism. And it most likely had to do with benefiting some big business or some other special interest groups that had had the favored eye of Lyndon Baines Johnson upon them. Of course, Johnson, it was not beyond Johnson to go out of his way to help out his friends. He's often lauded as being landslide Lyndon because he barely won his senatorial race, just a few votes. But then, of course, after Kennedy was shot and people began to love Democrats so much more, he easily won re-election, or his first real election after taking over as vice president to president. And because of his popularity, was able to finagle the Americans to go into the Vietnam War, believing that it was good, and then to install all these extra socialist plots, whether it be the Social Security Act of 1965 or, again, the Economic Opportunity Act of 1964. Well, I wish we had some more time to discuss in greater detail some of these policies. Really don't have time to do that, other than to say that that Johnson was a very skillful politician, a clever man, but nevertheless a very evil man. Well, how can we sum up all of these folks? We only have a few more minutes left on the Christian Worldview. Be happy to take your call if you have a call in the last minute here. I'll just give you the phone numbers real quickly. It's 849-0277. That's 849-0277. Or our backup line, which is 201-6955, 201-6955, both in the 864 area code. Appreciate the couple of calls we've already had today. This is your last chance to get in on the show if you want to call right now. In summary, what can we say about these men? Well, liberty is a hard thing to keep. Remember, Benjamin Franklin, in coming out of the Constitutional Convention, said, well, folks, you have a republic if you can keep it. And it didn't seem like we were able to keep it for very long. In fact, it was fought over even during the time of Jefferson, and he valiantly, as president, put down the forces that wanted to undermine the vision of the founders and the creating of this great republic. And soon after Jefferson's demise, we saw, even under John Quincy Adams, the fight for the John Quincy Adams is the son of John Adams, the fifth president, I believe, more of a fight and a struggle towards anti-liberty. And then again, Henry Clay and his people like Lincoln and Congress rose up to attack the principles of the founder, to promote an ultra-Hamiltonian state and to bring down the principles of liberty. It began that early, folks, but still we survived until 1860 as a free nation, and in the South until 1865 when Lee surrendered at Appomattox. But after that, folks, America effectively ended, and what we have instead is steps downward into the pit of globalism, socialism, even a form of fascism in the United States, whereby the vision of the Founding Fathers, the principles of liberty, and the principles upon which this nation were founded have been completely undermined and replaced with other things. So much so that even now, today, in history classes in public schools, it is wrong, considered evil, to read the Declaration of Independence. Remember that fellow in court in California discussing that very matter. People do not want to know about God. They do not want to know about the principles of secession or of liberty. We're here to help restore that, especially in the minds of Christians. You have to look at these presidents and understand what they've done to us, what these congressmen have done to us, these senators, what's happened to this great country. Taking back your country is going to require you to be informed and be able to get rid of this vision of history, this revisionist understanding of history that you've been taught all your lives. Go out and become informed. Listen to this show. Read books. There's a lot of the stuff's on the internet. And then act accordingly. We can take back this country by actions that we can end up taking as we become better educated. Let's start up. committees of correspondence that will help us do what the Founding Fathers did in the 1770s. We have the tools, we have the ability, we simply need to set our forces in order and take it one step at a time. You've been listening to a very special Memorial Day service today called A Memorial of Villainy. It's a special edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This Memorial Day 2005, that's May 30th, 2005, a gloomy day. What better thing to do than listen to Christian Worldview on such a gloomy day? We're so glad that you've joined us today. Thanks for the callers who waited and patiently got through on the lines to make their excellent comments. And we look forward to a regular edition tomorrow of Christian Worldview and seeing you there with us. Tomorrow. Until then, God bless you. This is Dr. John Coben. And Richie, do you want to say goodbye as well? Done a great job producing today.
See ya.
Thanks so much. We'll see you tomorrow.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.